Amen. Thank you so much, young people, for that good message and song, our prayer for America. America is in dire straits today as a nation that is experiencing lightning speed, rapid change. It was interesting over the past several weeks to watch as the various parties, the Democratic and the Republican Party, carried on their national conventions. I am a bit of a C-SPAN junkie, I will admit to that this morning, and so I watched extensively both of the conventions. I was particularly interested as we watched the Republican convention regarding the speech that was given by Rudy Giuliani. Of course, you will remember that Giuliani is the courageous mayor, was the mayor of New York, who led his city through the tragic days of 9/11, the terror attacks. And in his remarks at the Republican National Convention, Giuliani pointed out something that was interesting to me. He stated that with the previous convention, the Democratic National Convention, he made the observation that at the close of all of that convention, with all of its hoopla and its stagecraft and all of the drama of that week, he stated that during the whole course of that week and all of the speeches of the convention, not one time was there mentioned the words Islamic terrorism put together, Islamic being an adjective, terrorism being the noun. Not one time in a week. Not one time in a week's worth of speeches and pounding against others and declaring America to be a disaster area. Not one week was there any mention of the words Islamic terrorism. Now, Giuliani in his speech, he quipped and he said, well, perhaps people are afraid of offending terrorists. And I don't know if that's the case or not. But Giuliani's observation does reflect the attitude of a significant number of Americans who, for whatever reason, would prefer to ignore or wish away the very real threat that Islam poses to the core of Western civilization and to the United States in particular. I believe as pastor that this see no evil, Alice in Wonderland approach to life and to politics is very dangerous because we have denied the existence of the enemy in our midst. Or we have been very careful not to expose him, lest the public become uncomfortable. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you today, there is every reason to be uncomfortable. Now, before some of you think that I am fear-mongering, I want to say this. If you disagree with me when you are done, don't just walk out of here with some kind of an emotional squawking about how you disagree emotionally or your feelings were hurt. By the way, could we do this today? Let's put away our feelings. Put them away. Tuck them into your hip pocket. Don't let them come out till after the service. If you disagree with me, I want you to show me documented research where I am wrong. I would be open to meeting with you. I would allow you time to give your view. If you disagree with what I'm saying, don't just go out and disagree. I want documented research as to how what I said has been inaccurate. The documentation will be presented today to a very real threat that exists for our nation, not only our nation, but the threat that exists right here in our locality. Though the alarm concerning Islam's threat, which has been sounded more than it was, say, 5 years ago, there's an alarm that has been sounded about Islam's threat, but honestly, the mainstream media has refused to cover these stories. I think most of it is because of ignorance or disinterest, but some perhaps is a feeling that somehow we're not being politically correct if we actually expose not only the belief system, but the activities of groups that are acting within our borders. After all, Pastor, isn't this a religion that you are attacking? The answer to that question is yes. A simple yes. Someone asked this week, Pastor, why would you attack a religion? Because of the danger that that belief system poses to our freedom as Americans and to us individually, it must be exposed. Now, John chapter 16, we read a moment ago. I want you to look at verse number 2, John chapter 16, which is a prophecy that Jesus gave. And I want you to consider this in the light of recent events. John 16, verse 2. Jesus said to his followers, they shall put you out of the synagogues. In other words, out of the religious institutions. The synagogue in that day represented the established religious institution. They shall put you out of the synagogues, that is the established religious institution. Yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he doeth God service. Now I want you to notice something that is a prophecy of Jesus. He said, the time will come that whoever will kill you, Christians, believers, followers of Christ, the time will come that when you are put to death, those who put you to death will do so out of a religious motivation, believing that they do God service. Now, if you believe the Bible, then you must believe that somehow these words will literally be fulfilled in the course of history. Jesus said the time is coming that his followers would be persecuted by a religious entity who would not only seek to silence them, but ultimately seek to kill them. And in their killing of them, this religious entity would declare that they were doing God a service. God commanded the followers of Christ to be killed, and we will kill them. There is in the world today only one major religion with the widespread influence that would be necessary to fulfill this prophecy on a wide-ranging scale, and that is the religion of Islam. I quote from the Quran, chapter 9, verse 5. The Prophet Muhammad told his followers, quote, fight and kill the disbelievers wherever you find them, take them captive, harass them, lie in wait and ambush them using every stratagem of war. I could quote literally hundreds of verses from the Quran that have fueled the fires of jihad not only the world over, but in our country today. An American citizen, Christian citizen, make no mistake about it. The attacks of 9/11 was jihad, holy warfare against what they term to be the great Satan, the United States of America. And in this view, while we would disagree with the statement that today in its culture, American is a Christian nation, we don't think our culture is very Christian anymore. While we would disagree with that, the Muslims view this land as a Christian land and rightly view it as a land that was founded for Christian people and the freedom of worship of the Christian God, Jesus Christ. And so when they strike at the heart of America, they are striking at the heart of what we could call our corporate faith or Christianity. Jesus said the day would come when there would be those who would kill you, the followers of Christ, would kill you, and in so doing, believe that they had done God a service. I don't know of any verse in the Bible then that more aptly describes the phenomenon of Islam. Now, we are well aware that the dominance of religious Islam in America is not a goal that the Muslims can accomplish overnight. However, we have seen in Europe their undeniably destructive influence and how rapidly that can spread once they have established local centers of Islamic extremism known more commonly as mosques. A mosque is a center of Islamic extremism. The mosque in Plainfield, Indiana, where is headquartered the Islamic Society of North America, is a center of Islamic extremism. Now, I will back that up. But ladies and gentlemen, that is a startling statement. Because these structures that now pepper the countryside of the United States are more dangerous than we would have ever imagined because of what is being preached and taught within their four walls. A cursory reading of the Quran and the Hadith, the holy books of Islam, will indicate that the Prophet Muhammad always commanded his followers to take over in their domination by the use of force. They would use politics to begin with, and when they rise in power, they will use military and violent force. When we talk about mosques, most of you are aware, we just happen to have one of these in the otherwise all-American city of Plainfield, Indiana. It is the headquarters of the Islamic Society of North America. Now, a lot of people have asked me since 9/11 occurred, Pastor, what is the background of the Islamic Society of North America. What do they do down there? How was it founded? I had the distinct opportunity to visit with a man that was in leadership at the time and currently is part of their structure, though not the chief leader of the Islamic Society of North America. So I've had some experience within the building. But it is important whenever we think about an institution to consider how it was founded. We as Christians, for example, like to go back to the Christian founding of our nation and say that this nation was founded for a Christian, a moral, and a religious people. And you are historically right to say that. Our church, as an example, is 50 years old. And we like to go back. We celebrated our 50th anniversary. And we went back and we considered some of the early pastors, what they believed. By the way, they just believed the Bible is the Word of God. And they preached it faithfully here. And we had a wonderful celebration about the foundation of our church. Say, listen, what the founders of any institution believe is key to understanding the institution. Would you agree with me on that? What the founders believe. Especially when we consider an institution that was only founded, at least in Plainfield, as early as 1981. Well, I don't have time to go into all of it this morning, but I want to examine one of the co-founders of the Islamic Society of North America. One of the men for whom this religious organization in Plainfield was his brainchild. Now you say, Pastor, can you prove that this man was a founder of ISNA? Well, yes, I can. His name is Dr. L. Arian. Dr. L. Arian. And he claims in his own biographical sketch, which is available to you on the internet, www.freeismail-arian.com, that he helped to establish ISNA. I quote from his internet site, quote, Dr. L. Arian has also been an active community leader. He helped establish the largest grassroots organization in the U.S., the Islamic Society of North America, in 1981. The Islamic Society of North America acknowledges that this was a man who was one of their co-founders. Not only that, but over the history of this society, he has spoken in many of their events. He has been a featured speaker and someone that is greatly admired by the Islamic Society of North America and their millions of affiliate Muslims all over the world. Well, what about this Dr. L. Arian? What is his background? It is interesting. One need only go to the internet to pull up a file of a video of this man speaking in a high school in Chicago. Back in 1991, in a rally in the high school in Chicago where they were celebrating the Palestinian uprising of 1987, back in that rally in Chicago, Mr. L. Arian referred to Jews as pigs and monkeys in a public high school in Chicago. Now, this is the man that was one of the founders of the Islamic Society of North America. He called them in 1991 pigs and monkeys. Ladies and gentlemen, that type of anti-Semitism should make you very nervous, especially when it comes from the mouth of one of the founders of the most influential Islamic organization in America, the Islamic Society of North America. But Dr. L. Arian ran into some trouble in his work, not only with the Islamic Society of North America, but with several other societies of which he was a member. He had to go to court here a while back, and he actually filed an affidavit in court. The federal government brought him to court on charges that he was a supporter, a material supporter, of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Now you say, Pastor, who is that? They are an off-growth of the Muslim Brotherhood. Now for those who do not understand, the Muslim Brotherhood, by the way, these organizations all listed on the list of terrorist organizations by our federal government. The Muslim Brotherhood is an Egyptian organization founded some 80 years ago, out of which all of the various anti-American and terrorist groups have been spawned, Sunni terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda. Including Al-Qaeda. And so this Muslim Brotherhood was the place from which we get the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And this particular man, L. Arian, co-founder of ISNA, was brought to court on charges of supporting terrorism. Well, you say, Pastor, how did it turn out? After overwhelming evidence, he pleaded guilty. Guilty. Now, there were numerous charges laid against him. He pled guilty in a plea bargain on one charge, and that is admitting that he was a supporter and promoter of Palestinian Islamic Jihad. I have for you a copy of his admission in an affidavit that is part of the records of federal court. It reads, quote, these are the words of Al Arian, founder of ISNA, quote, my direct familiarity and involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood, remember that group from which all terrorists, Sunni terrorist groups derive, my direct familiarity and involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood occurred from the fall, now listen to this, from the fall of 1978 until about the end of 1982. I had lesser involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood from the end of 1982 to September of 1983. When did Al Arian found ISNA in Plainfield, Indiana? 1981. Well, he was an admitted member of the Muslim Brotherhood and was working on behalf of Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Interesting. Would you not be nervous if this church were founded by a man who was a self-admitted terrorist? Would you not think that somehow the teachings of this, even though he was a founder who was somewhat off the scene and detached, would you not think that somehow the teachings of the founder have filtered down even to the present hour? Those who have been members of this church since its inception understand that this church still stands for what its founder stood for, the preaching of the Word of God, and such is the case with the Islamic Society of North America. They continue to stand shoulder to shoulder in defense, and we'll get there in a moment, in defense of organizations that are clearly terroristic. Al Arian's defense lawyer admitted that Al Arian was a member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, though Al Arian had repeatedly denied it. His own defense attorney said, yes, he has admitted it, and they said he denied it at first because he was afraid. St. Petersburg Times, November the 10th, 2005. He said, well, my client lied initially, but yes, he was a member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. It is interesting, it did not take long for this district court in the state of Florida to declare that Al Arian, who was a co-founder of ISNA, was indeed a terrorist and that he did indeed promote terror by funding it from his various American organizations, including the Islamic Society of North America through something that is known as the Holy Land Trust. Monies from this community have been traced by federal prosecutors all the way into the hands of terrorists. I'm not telling you with whom to do business, but I personally am careful about who I do business with. I don't want one dime of my money somehow filtering down through this network into the hands of terrorists that will shed the blood of American men and women. And sometimes it is the patriotic thing to do not to go to establishments and patronize establishments that have what look to be terroristic ties. You do what you want. What did the judge say when he sentenced Al Arian, co-founder of ISNA, our little country club mosque down in Plainfield? What did he say? The court, Judge James Moody, had this to say in the sentencing. While he looked Al Arian square in the eyes, the judge said this, Dr. Al Arian, as usual, you speak very eloquently. I find it interesting that here in public, in front of everyone, you praised this country, the same country that in private you referred to as, quote, the great Satan, unquote. But that's just evidence of how you operate in the face of your friends and neighbors. This is a federal judge talking to the man who was the co-founder of ISNA as he sentenced him. Quote, you are a master manipulator. You looked your neighbors in the eyes and said you had nothing to do with the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. This trial has exposed that as a lie. Pastor, this is a religious man. He told a lie. The Quran gives all Muslims the privilege to lie about matters of religion if their lying will further the cause of Allah. That is a theological fact of Islam. The judge said this trial exposes that as a lie. Your backup claim is that your efforts were only to provide charities for widows and orphans. That, too, is a lie. The evidence was clear in this case that you were a leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. You were on the board of directors and an officer, the secretary. Directors control the actions of an organization, even the PIJ, and you were an active leader. He gives an example. When Iran, the major funding source of the PIJ, became upset because the PIJ could not account for how it was spending its money, it was to your board of directors that it went to demand changes. Iran wanted its representatives to have a say in how its money was spent. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you something. I don't want to receive any money from Iran. In fact, if I were receiving money from Iran, I would feel un-American. I'm American enough to understand that what I stand for and support should be supported by people who believe what I believe. In this case, clearly, the fanatical Islamic Iranian government was in full support of Dr. El-Arian and his efforts, including the work in Plainfield. When Iran, the major funding source of the PIJ, became upset because the PIJ could not account for how it was spending its money, it was to your board of directors that it went to demand changes. Iran wanted its representative to have a say in how the money was spent. To stop that, you, El-Arian, you leaped into action. You offered to rewrite the bylaws of the organization. You proposed that PIJ funds be controlled by a three-person committee, of which you would be one of the three. You made calls to fellow directors all over the world to gather support. This committee would account for Iran's money, all to keep the money flowing. But when it came to blowing up women and children on buses, did you leap into action then? Did you offer to form a committee to protect the innocent? Did you call your fellow directors and enlist their aid in stopping the bombing or even to stop the targeting of the innocent? No. You lifted not one finger. Now, this is a federal judge talking to the co-founder of the Islamic Society of North America. Do you picture this? This is in our backyard. You lifted not one finger, made not one phone call. To the contrary, you laughed when you heard about the bombings and you euphemistically called them operations. You even pleaded for donations to pay for more such operations. I'll give one specific example. On January 22, 1995, there was a double suicide bombing claimed by the PIJ. The bombings occurred at a bus transfer station. People, including women and children, were milling about waiting for their buses. When one pulled up, not a particular bus, but a random bus, the first bomb detonated, killing passengers and bystanders alike. The second bomb waited 10 minutes or so and blew up the ambulance crews and other bystanders who had rushed in to help the wounded and the dying. Anyone with even the slightest bit of human compassion would be sickened. Now, this is the judge talking to this man who was co-founder of our little club down here. Are you following how serious this is? Doesn't it bother you that the Hendricks County Flyer doesn't have the guts, courage, or intelligence to ever, ever, ever run a story like this? Well, Pastor, it wouldn't be politically correct. God help us if you'll sell your nation for political correctness. It's pathetic. The judge continues, anyone with even the slightest bit of human compassion would be sickened. Not you. You saw it as an opportunity to solicit more money, to carry out more bombings. You composed a letter to a member of the Kuwaiti legislature. Your true attitude is best described by your own words, and I quote. Now he's quoting El-Arian's words. The latest operation carried out by the two Mujahideen, who were martyred for the sake of God, is the best guide and witness to what the believing few can do in the face of Arab and Islamic collapse at the heels of the Zionist, speaking of the Jews, the Zionist enemy, and in keeping the flame of faith, steadfastness, and defiance growing. I call upon you to try to extend true support of the jihad effort in Palestine so that operations such as these can continue. He wrote this to a member of the Kuwaiti legislature, encouraging the continuing of bombings, mayhem, murder, and destruction. And this is the same man who founded the Islamic Society of North America in Plainfield. Now, if you disagree with me, show me the evidence. He claims it himself, and they for a long time have claimed him as well. And yet still, in the face of your own words, you continue to lie to your friends and supporters, claiming to abhor violence and to seek only aid for widows and orphans. Your only connection to widows and orphans is that you create them, even among the Palestinians. And you create them not by sending your children to blow themselves out of existence. No, you exhort others to send their children. The judge continued, "Your children attend the finest universities this country has to offer, while you raise money to blow up the children of others." Don't ever tell me that's an organization of peace. You'd have to be crazy. You'd have to be out of your mind. And then he closes with these words, "You are indeed a master manipulator." Mr. Al-Aryan was then sentenced to 19 months in federal prison and deportation upon his release. You will be sickened and saddened to know that on this past Tuesday, September the 2nd, Mr. Al-Aryan had completed his term behind bars and was released and is currently free in the state of Florida, pending subpoenas and a contempt of court charge because he refused to answer subpoenas, listen to this, in multiple terrorist cases being brought by federal prosecutors. That's what's down in Plainfield, folks. See, this man is one of their featured speakers. By the way, he was also a college professor at the, I believe it was the University of South Florida for a number of years. He was a computer science professor there. And guess what? In what doubtless is a bastion of liberalism, he enjoyed almost unanimous support from his faculty. Better think twice where you're sending your kids to school. These faculty members stood by this man who is a betrayer of his country and a promoter of killing and murder. They stood by a man who admitted himself, admitted to being a member of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, pled guilty to it, served time for it, and by the way, is today the hero of the followers of the Islamic Society of North America. It is indeed sickening. Was ISNA's founder then an admitted member of the Muslim Brotherhood when he founded ISNA? Yes, he admitted to that. Was he also a member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, a known terrorist group that our federal government has declared a terrorist group? Yes, he was a member of that as well. Was he imprisoned on charges of aiding and abetting terrorism? Yes, he was. Was he the co-founder of the Islamic Society of North America? Yes. Yes. Now, ladies and gentlemen, an organization follows the vision of its founder, and they continue in his steps. Well, Pastor, someone will say, naively, the organization has had opportunity to evolve, and over time they have dropped their radicalism. They no longer are supportive of any form of terrorism, but after all, on their website, it does say that they condemn acts of violence against the innocent. By the way, watch the words innocent. In Islamic theology, you are not considered innocent because you are a Christian. You are considered guilty. Acts of violence against you is not forbidden in Islam because you have not bowed the knee to Allah, nor will you. So you are considered guilty and acts of terrorism are legitimate against you. But does the Islamic Society, come on, Pastor, we're living in a new century now. Does the Islamic Society, do they today have verifiable connections to terrorist activity? Well, let me ask you a question. How many in this room are familiar with Hamas? Are you familiar with Hamas? You hear about them on the news all the time, blowing things up. They are a terrorist group. Again, the federal government has listed them as a terrorist organization. Yet the Islamic Society of North America, in opposition to what our federal government says on the 11th, on November 7th, 2006, November 7th, 2006, the Islamic Society of North America declared that Hamas is, and I quote, listen carefully, the democratically elected Palestinian government. Why can't you call it like you see it? Oh, it's now a government, not a terrorist group. Ladies and gentlemen, that is whitewashing, and that is what our group in Plainfield is doing. Hamas is a terrorist organization, yet federal prosecutors insist that ISNA did indeed finance Hamas through an entity known as the Holy Land Foundation. Now, these are federal prosecutors. These are not Baptist preachers making up something sensational. In fact, the Hendricks County Flyer did run this story, and I hold a copy of it for you today. This story is entitled, Islamic Society Files Suit After Alleged Hamas Link. And it goes on to tell us that the ACLU, oh my, the ACLU decided to come to the defense of the Islamic Society of North America. You see, the federal government was issuing a lawsuit against the Holy Land Trust Foundation. And what they found was that ISNA has been a cover for the funding of the Holy Land Trust. What is Holy Land Trust? It is a financial tool to gather money, offerings, if you will, and send them to Hamas, a terrorist organization. And when they found this out, they listed the Islamic Society of North America in the lawsuit as an unindicted co-conspirator. Unindicted because they were going after the Holy Land Trust, but a co-conspirator nonetheless. Oh, my, my. That made all of our little friends down in Plainfield very nervous, didn't it? Because, after all, it is bad press to be advertised as a co-conspirator, a Hamas supporter. And so, in fine fashion, the American Civil Liberties Union comes to the rescue. And they filed suit against the United States of America, essentially stating that what they have done is wrong, that somehow they have given a bad image to these folks that are really just a peaceful Islamic religious group. Now, because this lawsuit was filed by the ACLU, it became necessary for federal prosecutors to file what is called a cross-claim against the ACLU claim. In other words, the federal lawyers came up with their reasoning for keeping the Islamic Society of North America listed as an unindicted co-conspirator. Does anyone wonder why in the world? What is the reasoning of the federal government for doing this? Well, it just so happens that I have that information for you, and I'd like to share it. Now, what I'm sharing, some of you have had the misfortune of seeing a document that looks just like this. This is actually the court briefing that was filed by federal prosecutors in defense of their action of listing the Islamic Society of North America as an unindicted co-conspirator in the support of Hamas. This is a court document. How does the court defend, or the federal government defend its action before the court? I quote from page 12. The evidence introduced at trial, said the federal prosecutors, for example, established that ISNA and NATE, NATE is another group that kind of fellowships with ISNA, as it were. It's another Islamic group. That ISNA and NATE were among those organizations created by the United States branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, Pastor, what is the evidence that these folks down in Plainfield are funneling money to Hamas? What is the evidence? ISNA and NATE, in fact, this is quoting federal prosecutors now, ISNA and NATE, in fact, shared more with the Holy Land Foundation than just a parent organization. They were intimately connected with the Holy Land Foundation. This is the group that the feds are going after. They were intimately connected with the Holy Land Foundation and its assigned task of providing financial support to Hamas. Think about it. It's in your backyard. These are the words of federal prosecutors. Shortly after Hamas was founded in 1987 as an outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood, then the government gives an example of this, the International Muslim Brotherhood ordered the Muslim Brotherhood chapters throughout the world to create Palestinian committees whose job it was to support Hamas with media, money, and men. The U.S. Muslim Brotherhood, now this is federal prosecutors writing, I did not make this up. The U.S. Muslim Brotherhood created the U.S. Palestinian Committee, which documents reflect was initially comprised of three organizations, the HLF, the IAP, and the UASR. CARE, who is a legal defense of Muslims, CARE, C-A-I-R, was later added to these organizations. The mandate of these organizations, per the International Muslim Brotherhood, was to support Hamas and the HLF, Holy Land Relief Fund, particular role to raise money as a support of Hamas organizations inside the Palestinian territories. During the early years of this Holy Land organization, they raised money and supported Hamas through a bank account it held with ISNA and NATE. Now, these are federal prosecutors saying that Hamas was supported financially through a bank account that was run and money laundered through the Islamic Society of North America. Does everybody follow this? I'm telling you, folks, I'm not making this up. These are the words of federal prosecutors in their case against this Holy Land Foundation or this Holy Land Fund organization. ISNA checks deposited into the ISNA Nate account for the HLF were often made payable. Now here, ISNA checks made payable to, quote, the Palestinian Mujahideen. That is jihad. Wouldn't you be a little irritated if you got a hold of my checkbook and in the columns that I list my checks where I've written out in the columns, wouldn't you be a little irritated if you saw that I had written checks to the Palestinian Mujahideen? If when we pass out the church's financial statement, as we do every month, and you read down the list of checks, wouldn't you be a little bit irritated if you found out that Faith Baptist Church had sent a $150 support check to the Palestinian Mujahideen? Would that not raise some red flags in your mind? According to federal prosecutors, this is a fact of the Islamic Society of North America's books. And this, by the way, is the original name for the Hamas military wing. It's called the Palestinian Mujahideen. From the ISNA account, the HLF sent hundreds of thousands of dollars to Hamas leader Musa Abu Zarqouk, and then he lists a number of names that I won't bother pronouncing. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. Folks, listen to this. This is federal prosecutors talking about that group in Plainfield. They go on to say ISNA was also discussed during the 1993 Philadelphia conference, a meeting of the Palestine Committee convened to discuss the impact of the Oslo Accords. During the conference, Palestine Committee members discussed using ISNA as an official cover for their activities. Right there in Plainfield. Now, Pastor, I can't believe that. It's hard to imagine something as sinister exists in our backyard. And yet, according to federal prosecutors, it does. They sum up their argument, these federal prosecutors, in short, evidence introduced during the course of a public trial demonstrates that ISNA and Nate are indeed co-conspirators / joint venturers, and no relief that the court can grant would alter the state of the record in that regard. Established fact. Are they connected to terrorists? The evidence certainly points to it. Federal prosecutors believe it is so, and even expunging their name from the record, which has not been done, by the way, the federal prosecutors say does not alleviate them from the guilt of being an organ through which money was funneled to Hamas, money that was gathered in Hendricks County, money that was gathered in Plainfield, Indiana. ISNA refuses to call Hamas a terrorist organization and has actually sent them, according to federal prosecutors, financial support. Well, what about this man I mentioned that they sent hundreds of thousands of dollars to, this Musa Abu Marzouk? What about him? What does ISNA think of him? He is, by the way, a very high leader of Hamas. He is a leader in the Hamas organization, established by our federal government, a terrorist leader. In their official magazine, Islamic Horizons, the ISNA magazine, this Mr. Marzouk has been characterized as, quote, a member of the political wing of Hamas disliked by the Zionist entity for its Islamic orientation. In other words, the Jews don't like Hamas because it happens to be Islamic. No, the Jews don't like Hamas because it happens to seek to blow them up. It happens to seek to obliterate them from the face of the earth. That is why they don't like Hamas. He says it is disliked by the Zionist entity for its Islamic orientation. It continues, this man continues to be held hostage. Now, here's a terrorist, but the Islamic Society of North America says that this Marzouk is held hostage in the U.S. at the whims of his Zionist accusers. Blame it on the Jews. These words come from the Islamic Horizons magazine, November, December 1995. We're getting close to our day and time. Does it sound like the organization has changed its loyalty and its fidelity? Not in the least. It refuses to call Hamas a terrorist organization. it criticizes the Jews and says that it is the injustice that is spawned by Jews working secretly behind the scenes that has kept this Islamic leader in prison. Continuing, though, later dates, September-October 1997, described this terrorist leader Marzouk as being, quote, jailed without trial in New York for months for alleged ties to organizations, here it is, seeking Palestinian rights. That is a whitewash for terrorism. Hamas. This man is legitimately jailed, and may he stay behind bars. But ladies and gentlemen, this group in our backyard calls it illegitimate and says it's all a conspiracy of the Jews, the Zionists. Well, Pastor, this doesn't reflect upon the current leadership of ISNA, does it? After all, I saw that lady who is a part of the head of ISNA today, and she seems like a nice gal. Well, what about the current heads of ISNA? How do they feel? What is their position? Well, it's interesting. In July of this year, ISNA leadership attended a lovely interfaith conference that was held in Madrid. It was held on July the 23rd, 2008. Oh, how nice, an interfaith conference. That sounds ecumenical and a big love fest. Well, perhaps it would have been, except that it was organized by an individual with the last name of El Turki. Now, remember, we had El Arian. Now we have El Turki. Al Turki happens to be employed by the Saudi royal family, and he is head of one of their organizations called the Muslim World League. The Muslim World League has as its purpose the promotion of Islamic Wahhabism. Now, if you remember last year, we talked about Wahhabism. It is the most extreme, most ultra-fundamental, most conservative, and most violent wing of all of Islam. By the way, the mosque in Plainfield is unashamedly Wahhabi. That is their sect, Sunni Wahhabi. Does everybody follow this? And so we have this group that is promotive of this extremism, the Saudi royal family, of course, being behind this 100%. Mr. Al Turki, head of this group, was the man who organized this interfaith conference. Well, how lovely. We're going to go to Madrid and have a love fest. There's only one problem. Mr. Al Turki is named as a defendant in a lawsuit alleging that he was partner with a senior Al-Qaeda financier, Mohammed Ghalib, blah, 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 I cannot pronounce that, brother-in-law to Osama bin Laden. Now, let's get the picture straight. We have Mr. Al Turki. He's going to have an interfaith love fest in Madrid, and he sponsored it and invited over 100 different religious leaders from the world to come. And he's excited about his big love fest, but he's got a little problem because he's on trial now for, supposedly being a partner in a financing effort that sent money directly to Al-Qaeda. He never denies being a business partner with the brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden. Never denies it. Folks, let me ask you a question. If I was in business partnership with the brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden, how many would be nervous? And rightly so. He never denies that, but the suit alleges that these two men used profits from their business deals to fund Al-Qaeda cells. The lawsuit further alleges that the Spanish scheme provided material support directly to Al-Qaeda operatives and the September 11th, 2001 attacks. So here is a man that is being charged with supporting materially the 2011 attacks on our nation, and he is going to have an interfaith conference. Well, how wonderful. Maybe he's changed. Well, what did he say about the attacks in 2001? This Mr. Al Turki, Mr. We're going to have a big conference of religious leaders. What did he say? I will quote. Mr. Al Turki, after the 9/11 attacks, said, quote, "The attacks are a result of injustice which is carried out in the world, particularly in the world which is led by the USA. They are greatly responsible," this is the USA now, "they are greatly responsible for the injustice which exists in the world today." But now he's going to have an interfaith conference. And he's going to call all of these religious leaders together. This man who said, "The 9/11 attacks, America, it's all your fault." An interfaith conference, oh how lovely, with a man being charged as an Al-Qaeda financier who funneled money that went to support the 9/11 terror attacks on our nation. He's having an interfaith conference. Guess who's going? Guess who went? Syed Mohammed Said, the former Secretary General of the Islamic Society of North America, and the current president, Ingrid Mattson, both attended an event sponsored by a man who is being charged with funding materially the attacks on our nation in 9/11. You know, my mama used to say, birds of a feather flock together. And Pastor, that's guilt by association. Do you know there is such a thing? See, if you don't want to be viewed as trash, don't run with the trash. Wake up to that a little bit. You would have a right to be nervous if my best fishing buddies were being charged by the federal government with acts of terrorism against our nation. You'd have a right to be nervous. You'd have a right to be nervous if I were attending interfaith conferences that were sponsored by men who are now charged with financing terror and the 9/11 attacks. You'd have a right to question if I had a buddy whose business partner was Osama bin Laden's brother-in-law. I mean, doesn't that make anybody nervous? And yet this passes without notice. The Muslim Brotherhood, where you say, Pastor, okay, guilt by association. Well, okay, let's go on. Isn't it currently involved in connections to what appears to be terrorism? Well, it's interesting. The Muslim Brotherhood claims ISNA as a brotherhood organization. Now, this is fascinating. The Muslim Brotherhood, you'll recall, is the 80-year-old organization out of Egypt from which almost all Sunni terrorist groups have been spawned. Government prosecutors filed as evidence a document written by a Mohammed Akram Adulai, which recognizes ISNA as an active Muslim Brotherhood organization. This is the document that they filed in federal court. I hold it in my hand. Pastor, where in the world do you get this? The Freedom of Information Act in this country has done a world of good to make available to the average citizen information that we need. You say, oh, well, Pastor, it's all written in Arabic, page after page. You can't read Arabic, can you? No, I cannot read Arabic. But thankfully, the FBI translated it so we would know. Now, remember, this is a document that has been submitted in a court case that is pending in relationship to the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, what does the document state? I mean, what is this organization? Well, in this document, it's very lengthy, written by this Muslim organization. In this document, the Islamic Society of North America is listed as a Muslim Brotherhood organization with a long-term goal for America. Where is it listed? Here's the listing on the back page. The very first of these Muslim organizations is the Islamic Society of North America. Now, this was written by a man who was writing about the objectives of the Muslim Brotherhood in the USA. Does everyone follow this? And he is stating that the Islamic Society of North America is part of their organization. Well, what was this group's goal for America? I'm glad you asked. This document states this group's goal, and I'll read it to you. Quote, their work, speaking of the Islamic Society of North America, you want to know what's going on down there? Let's get it from the horse's mouth. Amen. Remember, this is not the Baptist preacher making this up. This is one of their documents, Muslim Brotherhood documents, which, by the way, they have not denied the legitimacy of any of these documents. Quote, their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. I continue. Without this level of understanding, we are not up to this challenge and have not prepared ourselves for jihad yet. It is a Muslim's destiny to perform jihad and work wherever he is and wherever he lands until the final hour comes and there is no escape from that destiny. That is their own document, written in Arabic, seized by the FBI, translated by the FBI, and now entered as evidence against the Holy Land Foundation and ISNA in their pending court cases in U.S. federal court. Wonder what's going on down there. Well, we've got Saeed and Mattson running over to a terrorist interfaith conference. We have their own people stating that their goal is ultimately jihad. I believe this, that ISNA's goal ultimately is the establishment of Islam over the United States of America. Pastor, how do you believe that? Because I was an eyewitness to it. After the 9/11 attacks, myself and Pastor Mark Falls went down to the mosque in Plainfield simply to get information. I didn't know anything much about the Muslim religion at that time. And we walked in to the mosque, and there was no one around except finally we found a secretary. We kind of gave ourselves a guided tour of the building. Then we found a secretary, and the secretary, above her desk in the front, she had a series of slogans, kind of like bumper stickers above her desk, things that would inspire her to greater secretarial service in the cause of Allah. And one of those said, quote, I'll never forget it, our goal, dash, the establishment of a universal, that means everywhere, ideal, that means Sharia law, Islamic state, our goal. And they will work incrementally toward that goal. You say, preacher, how do you know? They're becoming increasingly politically active. How many read about our own Andre Carson, who attended the Islamic Society of North America Labor Day Convention just a few days ago in the city of Columbus, Ohio? And in that convention, he encouraged every Muslim to run for political office, regardless of how insignificant that office was. By the way, Ingrid Mattson was the special guest of the Democratic National Convention, and she helped to head a religious gathering that took place in Denver on the eve of that convention to promote religious understanding. I suppose she had a good idea how to do that since she just returned from the Madrid conference sponsored by our terrorist friend we just mentioned. They're becoming increasingly politically active. They are also becoming increasingly politically astute. This is interesting. In years gone by, ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, they have an election task force. And in years gone by, they have endorsed officials as far as who the Muslims should vote for. This year, though, a representative of their election committee has stated that they will not endorse any political candidate for president, despite nearly universal appeal and support for him among Muslims. Oh, well, they're being more bipartisan now. They're not supporting anybody for president. The reason given by this representative of the Islamic Society of North America was this. We will not endorse Barack Obama, though all of us are in favor of him, because we feel it our endorsement will hurt his chances. A man is known by his friends, and he is also known by his enemies. They are more politically astute, though, so they did not endorse, but for that reason. That, by the way, was in the Indianapolis Star, in case you're interested. They're becoming increasingly politically noxious. And by the way, rather controlling over political parties. You say, Pastor, why is that? Well, remember the beginning of my message. I cited Rudy Giuliani, who stated that it was interesting that in the Democratic National Convention there was no mention of the words Islamic terrorism. Do you remember my saying that at the beginning of the message? Do you know there was a reason why there was no mention of the words Islamic and terrorism together at the Democratic National Convention? And here is the reason. The Islamic Society of North America pressured the Democratic leadership not to use the word Islamic and terrorism together. You say, Pastor, how do you know that? Because in April 21st, 2008, April 21st, this year, the ISNA, Islamic Society of North America, they had approached the McCain campaign. This is way back in April. And representatives of the Islamic Society of North America at Plainfield told representatives of the McCain campaign that he should stop using the word Islamic to describe terrorism. apparently they spoke to all of the candidates, some of whom dutifully dropped that word because we wouldn't want to offend. A John McCain representative said that he would continue to use that terminology because it is accurate. And it accurately portrays the enemies of the United States of America. But do you see how their influence is reaching into multiple places of high power in our nation? Well, what's the goal of ISNA for the upcoming presidential election? We wonder about that, don't we? I guess I'm going to quote something that Mr. Saeed, now remember, he was the Secretary General of that group and still works with that group. He is the man with whom I personally met for about an hour and a half, 2 hours one day, with Pastor Mark Falls as my eyewitness to the meeting. What did Mr. Saeed have to say about the political campaign? It's interesting. Folks, I don't know how to take this, but I'm going to just throw it out there and let you interpret it the way you want to interpret it. He was speaking, Saeed was recently at a group of Muslims in Houston, Texas. And Mr. Saeed, who is certainly in a position to know because he has since relocated from Plainfield to Washington, D.C., where he functions as a lobbyist for the Islamic Society of North America and has met with the highest powers of our land, including our president, Mr. Saeed made this statement in Houston. I'm not sure how to take this, but I'm going to read it and kind of let you decide. Mr. Saeed, who is certainly in a position to know, he told Muslims at a conference in Houston that whether Obama wins or loses, quote, his candidacy will reinforce that Muslim children can become the presidents of this country. Let me ask you a question. How could Obama's candidacy reinforce the idea that Muslim children could become the presidents of this country? How could that be? I thought he was a Christian. Now, I'm only quoting Mr. Saeed, one of the most powerful Islamic leaders in the United States of America, who said somehow this election is inspirational to Muslim children that they too could become the presidents of this country. I am not making an accusation. I am not even making an innuendo. I'm simply saying you decide for yourself. The tragedy here, ladies and gentlemen, is that much of this goes completely unreported. So, Pastor, what is the summary? There is no doubt in my mind, and now I'm going to give a personal opinion. This opinion does not necessarily reflect the opinion of the Faith Baptist Church, its deacons, Sunday school teachers, or bus captains. In my personal opinion, the Islamic Society of North America is an organization that undeniably has ties to terrorism, both in its founding and its past, in its attitude toward terrorists and terrorist organizations, in its ongoing support of the same and promotion of those whom the federal government has condemned as terrorists who actually admitted to it but continues to support, in the accusation that material support has funneled through Plainfield all the way to Hamas, and in the association of its current leadership with men who were business partners with Osama bin Laden's brother-in-law and are currently facing trial for supporting and promoting financially the 9/11 attacks on this nation. Folks like that are not good neighbors. We need to wake up. We need to wake up. If we decide to put our heads in the sand and pretend that everything's okay in Plainfield and kind of wish this all away, if we decide to do that as Americans, we have given that organization such a foothold and influence that it will continue to multiply its influence to shape ultimately American policy and the future of your children and grandchildren. Why do I preach the way I do? Because I have two sons and I want to see them grow up in a free America. Lord willing, one day I'll have grandsons and I want to see them grow up in a free America. And ladies and gentlemen, evil exists in this world. And evil can be identified, can be pinned, can be called out, and can be named and should be in the pulpits of our land. If the newspapers will not do the job, and I defy anyone to refute the evidence I presented. Don't walk out, man, I just disagree with Pastor Monty. Okay, if you disagree, show me why. Be man enough to come and show me why. Show me why face to face. If the newspapers of this country will not print the truth, if they will not dig more deeply into a story to find all the connections, then it is up to patriotic Americans and, quite frankly, preachers who love their country and love their Lord and love their Bible to stand up and tell their people what is going on. Way back when 9/11 occurred, we hastily put together the Homeland Security Organization. The various leaders of that organization have told us over and over again that if we see something suspicious, we need to report it. How many have heard that? Keep your eyes open, American citizens. Truck drivers, keep your eyes open. You're crisscrossing the nation. Citizens, keep your eyes open. If you live near an oil or gas refinery, keep your eyes open. If you see anything suspicious, they told us, even if you're not 100% sure, yeah, anything suspicious, just report it to the FBI. Hey, let us know so we can follow up and keep America safe. Well, may I say that I am simply following what Homeland Security has said to do. I have seen something undeniably suspicious, and it's time for us to wake up. Preacher, what do we do as Christians? There is only one thing we can do, is pray. Pray? Only one thing? Maybe more. Spread the word. Spread the word. Let people know what's down there. Get it out in the public eye a little bit. Air out the dirty laundry. Let it meet the light of day. My mother always used to say, the rats run when the lights are turned on. Turn on some lights. And then as American citizens, pray and pray and pray for your country, for your elections. I'm not endorsing anyone. For your country, for your elections, for your elected officials, whoever they may be, that they too will see the light of the evil that exists among us. Father, I pray you'll take the message today and help us, Lord. Help us to understand the peril of the age in which we are living. Help us, Lord, to be a people, as Christians, concerned about our nation, concerned about truth, diligent enough to research, to look, to seek, to find, and then courageous enough to expose. Lord, we have been told by our leaders that we have a responsibility to blow the whistle. Father, I pray you will make each of us courageous in this. And Lord, I pray that as Christians, we will have a passion and a burden for our country, for its needs, as never before. Spirit of God, take the message to make us a people aware of the perils of our time and grounded firmly in our faith that he that is in us is greater than he that is in the world. We pray it in Jesus' name. Let's stand.